From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the next exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name is Carl, and we have Keon. Keon.
Hi.
How was your week?
It's great. I ate turkey. I liked it. It was good. Also, do you wash your sweaters on cold? Because I feel like I have a black sweater, and mine is way more muted than yours.
I feel like this is a trick question.
It's not a trick question.
What are you trying?
I'm just wondering why your black sweater is still black and mine is like, it looks like it's like leaving.
Who washes your clothes?
Leaving the earth. I wash my clothes.
Oh.
I wash them hot. I wash everything hot.
I don't really wash my clothes.
You don't wash your clothes?
I mean, I wash my clothes, but I pay somebody to do it.
Oh, really? You like take it to a dry cleaner?
Mm-hmm. Or take it to like this place to, they do like a pickup.
Okay. You take it to an auntie and they pick it up. What place do you?
Well, they pick it up and then they wash them.
They bring it back folded?
And they bring it back folded and stuff.
Oh, dude, that's bougie, bro.
No, it's not.
I've used services like that before. It's bougie.
No, it's not.
It's like $30 a pop for a bag.
No, it's not.
How much do you pay?
I don't want to talk about it. It's not,
gotcha.
Dude. Everybody does it. Who lives a busy life? Like,
oh really? Oh yeah. I think I heard of like, Elon Musk doing that. And
no, I think if you live a busy life, I mean, I think that's normal.
Yeah, Steve Jobs, I think, did it.
Just no, I'm not saying that.
I think the billionaires do it. You're right. Yeah, the bill.
No, I'm saying like, it's not as much as you think. It's like literally.
I've used them before. They're like,
I'll do it like once. I do it like once a month.
If you have a lot of clothes, I guess, but
yeah.
But my experience with them, it's like $30 per.
But I also don't have like a washer and dryer, so.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I don't have a washer dryer or like.
They're complex dust.
So it's probably going to cost roughly, it's probably the same amount if you do like a washer and dryer plus. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
You're right. That's why. Yeah, I believe. Yeah, poor people use those services too. Not just you bougie guys.
How are you? How was your Thanksgiving?
Well, that explains why your color is maintained, because you have a professional doing it. My Thanksgiving was good. We went out to a restaurant. I've never eaten at a restaurant on Thanksgiving.
Oh, cool.
And so my wife is like, "Look, reserve the place," because her family was in town. And so.
Oh, was it nice?
It was nice. We went to this place called Nido, which is at the Lauren Hotel, which is like on Barton's, like right over on Barton Springs and Riverside. And we got a view of the river or the lake, whatever you want to call it. And and there was like a fixed menu, so you didn't get to choose your food, which is great because you know, having that indecision period, and then just kind of chilled.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was great. How about yours? How was your
thing? That was great. We went to my cousins. We were barbecuing, catching up, and we barbecued some ribs, some fajitas. We didn't do a turkey after all, but we did a ham.
That
was fun,
dude.
It was fun.
Do you ever get tired of ham? I don't even like ham. I don't know how you like ham that much. Do you like ham that much?
I think it's because I only eat it once a year.
Okay.
Around Thanksgiving, that's why.
You're not a big like ham sandwich guy.
No.
Okay.
I'm not a big sandwich guy, just in general.
Yeah.
Unless
you're a taco guy.
More of a taco guy. But no, it was great. I had a really good time. I had a really good time. It was fun. It was a blast. It was a blast. And then we watched the Cowboys. They finally won. Cowboys won, which was crazy. They didn't lose at the end like I thought they were going to lose. So
okay.
It was a very good game. But they usually like screw it up at the very end, and they didn't screw it up. I was like, we were all wild. I was like, when are they going to screw this up? And they didn't screw it up. And they pulled off the victory. And then tonight, UT's playing A&M, so that's going to be a really good one, too.
Okay.
There's a lot of football yesterday.
Yeah, it's the football time of year.
Yeah.
That's really what's going on in the world right now.
Yeah. Cool. If you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live. We cover – oh, I didn't even ask you about this. I didn't ask you about your top stories. Meta.
Okay.
I guess we'll figure it out on the fly.
I guess so.
If you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live. We cover all the top stories every week here on Stacker.News. Check out our YouTube page. There's a lot of videos. Last week's super spicy story was, most viewed story was this one, the Mark Andreessen Avatar one.
Oh.
Apparently everybody liked that one.
Yeah, people... Yeah.
That one, and then
keywords.
The France attacks on graphene was another one that was popular.
Yeah. I like how we let stackers in on like YouTube growth strategies. We like that's kind of what we're telling. We're like, hey, look at our best performing videos. Look at that. Check out our keywords. Check out our
these are posts that the stackers thumbnail. These are literally the posts that the stackers have on stacker.news. All we're doing is just talking about them.
I know, but it's kind of like we can kind of, I can kind of see, or at least when we go over these, it feels like to me, I'm learning a little bit about YouTube's algorithm, what people are looking for in videos. Cause a lot of it, as we've discussed before, so long as the video has nothing to do with Bitcoin, performs pretty well. But the moment we start mentioning Bitcoin, they kind of just take a dump.
I feel like this year has been very bad for Bitcoin, just as far as like the narrative, and then everybody like,
we look at even gold and silver one, which is a great story. That one didn't do anything, and it's not even, it doesn't have to do anything with Bitcoin, but it's like, it's not like, you know, it has to do with someone who understands monetary
policy. I mean, I told you this like 2 years ago on the show, like once the ETF came through, that was the end of Bitcoin. I even said it, I called it here on the show, go back. And I say this all the time. I never bring it up anymore. Cause it's like, it's a broken record at this point. That was the end of it. I don't mean like the end of it. I mean like it's the end of just grabbing everybody's attention. I feel like the ETF just came in the room and ate everything up.
Sucked the air out.
I mean, we're going to talk about something later on about the ETF, which is big news.
Is that one of your top stories?
Yeah, one of my top stories. But like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like the ETF just came in and took over Bitcoin, and you're kind of seeing it. I mean,
definitely brought in the suits. I feel like the suits are the kings now of Bitcoin. It became like a kind of a developer techie kind of focus culture, and instead it became like a suit.
I mean, also too, it's like, I mean, I see Bitcoin as in like three different areas now. It's like the cypherpunks working on all the stuff that's like, you know, the cool Bitcoin Lightning stuff. And then I see the Nostr ecosystem, which is doing its Nostr stuff, but it's still so early there. And then I see like the ETF and the financial bros, like, and those are the three segments that I see.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could think that is three distinct groups.
That's what I see in Bitcoin right now. I don't see anything else besides those three. And to be honest, like, there's not a lot of movement in those three segments right now. I mean, maybe the Nostr thing a little bit, but that is so small and no one's talking about it besides the people on Nostr. And then on the ETF side, everybody's talking about that, but it's all the treasury stuff. And and then when you look at the cypherpunk stuff, like, that's all the stuff that we're into here at Pleb Lab, but that doesn't get any attention, or no one cares about it because it's like so small, it's so niche. So it's just going to show up on like on stacker.news, and it won't, it's not going to make any podcasts. No one's going to care about it on YouTube. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah. So I think I would not partition out Nostr from the cypherpunks. I would say, like, just there's a general tech builder class type of section of Bitcoin. Then there's like the ETF part, but there's like a self sovereignty Bitcoin-y thing.
Nostr's not Bitcoin. ETF. But Nostr's
I know, but it's like, I would conclude, you know, they consider themselves part of Bitcoin because a lot of them are Bitcoiners. And I think it makes sense to kind of group them in there. But the third group I would categorize more as like, I don't know, like pre-Bitcoiners, or like, you know, like a plebs trying to figure out, am I going to go in the ETF track, or am I going to go in the more hands-on track? And that's the way I would partition them. But yeah.
I mean,
that's, yeah, I also haven't thought about that much, but
I mean, I think about it all the time, but there's I usually don't talk about it because it upsets people when I say these things. Sorry in advance if you heard that.
People get upset at everything. So
I mean, they'd be like, I can't believe Carr said Nostra's not Bitcoin. I'm like, yeah, I did. Sorry.
Well, I think even Fiat Joff would agree with you. So
it's just not. It's just not like I remember like Bitcoin Lightning's like freaking amazing stuff. It's just that Nostra's just not Bitcoin. I mean, eventually, hopefully, like Bitcoin will eat a lot of Nostra and Lightning and everything. And we'll have like this kind of like what Justin's doing, where like he's putting a lot of the Lightning stuff into Nostra, and eventually it'll just be Lightning, and it'll just, you know, leverage a little bit of what Nostra has in its stack. And I don't know, man. We'll see. Anyways, if you've never seen this crazy show, we're going to do the top three right now on Stacker News. The number three, is this what you have for the number three?
Yeah, that should be it.
All right. The number three top story is my trip to the Tokyo Bitcoin basis from Simple Stacker. 23 comments, 12,400 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, Simple Stacker went to had a trip to Tokyo, and I think one day in the saloon he was writing about where can I spend Bitcoin in Tokyo, and I responded, you should go to the Tokyo Bitcoin base because we have someone in Plublab who recently visited there.
I know, it's kind of funny because I was like, is this the same person?
yeah, no, they're definitely not.
I mean, they were there at the same time.
It's they were there.
Kind of weird.
Time. But it was like a very popular time in Tokyo for Bitcoin stuff, I understand.
Okay.
I don't think Simple Stacker was there. I think it was purely a coincidence. But we had someone who works at a Plublab who was there. And they had posted Tokyo Bitcoin base photos. And when Simple Stacker said they were there, I was like, dude, you should go here. It looks really cool based on this person's pictures. And so it looks like he ended up going. He made a stop, I think because something else that they planned on doing was canceled. He said it was pretty empty. I think that it might have been the day after or the day of an event that they had just had. I think Folger Ventures sponsored some kind of Bitcoin Builder Day there. And so he said it was, he said that it looks like they have a pretty elaborate kind of like museum-y science project type of stuff in their lounge area. And so you got to check it out. This picture in particular is a mining system that heats an feeds into an aquaponics system and keeps like a fish tank warm. I think it's also powered by solar, just kind of like a Rube Goldberg type of mining setup that is great for stuff like this. It becomes kind of art in a way, it's kind of like industrial art. Their base looks really cool. I love how it's decorated.
It looks really cool.
Yeah, looks, you know, look, it's sort of like a mid-century Japan. That's kind of how I would describe the aesthetic. He went here for lunch because they accept Bitcoin, and he was disappointed in the food, unfortunately. But
really,
yeah, the food truck.
Oh yeah, that does look disappointing.
The food, I guess there are many of those food trucks and they all accept Bitcoin. So the owner of the food truck company.
The Bitcoiner?
Yeah.
Is that so, Mount
Fuji.
Oh wow.
Yeah. We all know that.
Does anybody ever climb that thing?
I would guess lots of people have. I would guess it's a thing that people do. I don't even know. I don't know how tall it is. It
looks like it's gonna erupt or something. It looks like there's like a crack there.
Oh, it definitely might be a volcano. I don't know much about volcanoes and stuff.
Oh, cool. They have a bookshelf.
Yeah, they had a bunch.
Do you see one of your favorite books?
Let's see. Which one? It's hard to get through here. I mean, I like The Sovereign Individual. I read Gun, Germs, and Steel. That's not really a Bitcoin book. Mastering Lightning. Digital Gold was good. Broken Money. I don't see Broken Money. Maybe someone took it.
What is the grid? I never heard of that one.
Fooled by Randomness.
Hmm.
The grid.
Right. Yeah, there's one over here called the grid.
I can't see it. It's maybe behind the.
Yeah, it's like right there.
Well, it was really cool.
Next to the Price of Tomorrow.
It was really cool. One of the pictures he took had someone in it who was sitting in the lounge. And the person who was sitting in the lounge came on Stacker News and they're like, hey, that was me.
Oh, wow.
That he took a picture. Doxed. picture of, but it was, his face is covered by the terminal there, but you could see him there on the
back. Yeah.
But he came, he slid into the comment section and he's like, bro, that's me. Thanks for hiding my face.
Yeah.
And then he described his own experience visiting there. He said there's a second floor to the lounge, but it's mostly just like an further like entryway to the offices upstairs.
That's really cool. Really cool. Hopefully we'll get to check it out at some point. I want to check it out. I know Taruku and Lisa are doing a really good job of trying to grow that space, so should be really cool. We met Lisa at Meridia, and then we met up with Taruku at Atlanta for TapConf.
Taruku came to Austin once, didn't he?
No, it's a she.
It's a she. Okay.
Yeah. So Taruku, we've known her. We've known Taruku since 23.
Okay.
And then I've done my best to like help her out and give her advice and you know, give her as much information as we could, at least Pub Lab, to let her know how we did it and how to do it since about that long ago. Yeah. So
I thought also wasn't there the wallet founder from Japan that came and visited.
Oh yeah. He's over there. I don't know if he's still building that or not.
I think they shut down the wallet.
Yeah.
But I don't.
There's a lot of people that have come through Plub Lab from Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always cool.
At this point, it's kind of hard to remember how many people I've talked to about like hubs and stuff. At this point, it's been like dozens. At this point, I just got off a call like an hour ago with somebody who's doing a hub right now.
They're really cool. It's really nice to see Bitcoin in the physical world. And, you know, even if it's just like people who care about Bitcoin gathering together.
Yeah.
There's something special about it.
Definitely something special about it. Definitely every major city should have one for sure. Because I think if you don't have one, I think Bitcoin will just die in the city. Like it won't happen.
Yeah. Needs a catalyst.
You need at least one hub in every major city. At least that's my dream. We're lucky. We have three major hubs in Austin.
Do we?
Yeah. So Nifty's,
okay.
Pleb Lab, and then Bitcoin Park. We have three hubs. That's how you know we're the Bitcoin capital of the world.
I don't know. Has Nifty started doing events and stuff? As far as I knew.
I mean, it's a hacker space.
Okay. I didn't realize she was renting out desks and stuff. I thought it was just
her. Oh, no. No, I mean, it's like a hub, though. Right?
Somewhere to go, yeah. And yeah, somewhere to be.
Somewhere to visit.
Yeah, somewhere to visit. Okay.
But yeah, we have three in Austin. And then that Web 5 one, or is it a Web 3 one or Web 5? It's like a Web
5. I don't know. Is Dorsey involved? If it's Dorsey's involved, it's Web 5.
No, I think that one's CIA. I don't know. We don't know what that one is. Might be. But. Yeah, pretty cool stuff, dude. The number two top story of the week is the part of Bitcoin you have to trust. This is from Scoresby. 56 comments, 3,671 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so this Scoresby continues going through Voskal's crypto economics book. And this week's chapter was on... the axiom of resistance, which is sort of the Bitcoin succeeding or believing in Bitcoin's system succeeding relies on us believing that resisting the state in a network software context is possible. So that is kind of like the assumption Bitcoin's value prop depends on. And yeah, and so this chapter in crypto economics just calls that out, just brings that to attention. It says here, proving statements about Bitcoin requires reliance on axiomatic systems, specifically mathematics, probability, catalactics, which is a Austrian economics thing about prices, and the assumption that it's possible to resist the state. And so it's more or less what this is about. And that's what Scoresby wrote about here and kind of elaborated on is that Bitcoin has not really been attacked yet. So we don't, like, in a very direct manner by the state. They haven't tried to go after mining. The tax, we know that a state, that only a state could do, they have not, some of them they have not yet done. The ones that would really destroy Bitcoin, like, you know, taking, buying, somehow occupying both mining pools that control like 50% of the hash rate, or things like that.
I would definitely say they have attacked Bitcoin already, and they are currently attacking Bitcoin.
Yeah,
covertly.
Not in a way that most of us would agree would really risk Bitcoin not succeeding. I would agree with you that it's like under pretty regular attack, but they're mostly going after like on and off ramps, really, you know, destroying the UX with regulations around this kind of stuff. But they're not yet trying to destroy the system itself. They're kind of destroying usage of it, I would say, and a bit different. But it, you know, regardless, I think even if it's whether Bitcoin is currently under attack or, you know, not yet under attack, it's succeeding, and it's succeeding requires it to be censorship resistant, and all these things to give it value require Bitcoin being able to resist state control over it. And we just take that at face value. We take that as it's stated. Like, we can't prove that Bitcoin can resist state control. We just kind of have to assume it's possible that the system will be able to.
Yeah. We got the top comment from Elvis Mercury said, this is the biggest thing missing from almost every discussion of Bitcoin, in my opinion, what it means for it to succeed or fail, the various moves the state could make, what might happen as a result, and how we could tell empirically if it were happening. My take is that most Bitcoiners are operating under cartoonish assumptions about this, mainly from having never really thought critically about any of it and having instead incorporated the Bitcoin talking points as a major matter of religion. The tale of this is why the way of being are the grandstanding critiques of the existing systems, including prophecies about the ultimate fate. Yeah, he goes on. Do you agree with Elvis Mercury?
Yeah, I
think you do, yeah.
I would agree. I mean, I agree with most things that call out Bitcoiners being complacent. So I definitely agree with the sentiment. I do think that there is a large body of writing and thinking that has been done on the state attack stuff, but yeah, it's definitely not popular, and represents a minority of the content produced about Bitcoin, and should be discussed more. So yeah, I agree with him.
Yeah, I agree with him too. Interesting.
Yeah, lots of good stuff in the comments here.
Yeah. Check it out. The number one top story of the week is this is not what adoption looks. Was he trying to say like or loop?
Yeah, it was a typo.
Okay. This is from Siggy 4701 comments, 20,000 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, I thought the title was actually a joke, but it was a typo. Siggy documents his experience with the Occupy Wall Street movement. So these are photos taken by him through one of the camps in what used to be what is, I think, Zuccotti Park.
That was in 2008, right?
Yeah,
or 2010 or something.
2008, 2010, roughly. I think a little bit, maybe 2007. I think as early as 2007. But he said he was working in downtown Manhattan and, you know, got a chance to stop by and, you know, talk to some of the people. He said it was pretty small. He said it was a lot smaller than you'd think it was based on the news reports, and, you know, describes how they were actually occupying the park. It was, I guess it's a public park that is privately owned, which is a common thing, I guess, in New York City. And yeah, he said they're, most, you know, the people that he talked to were people who had their homes foreclosed on, or he said there were you know, socialists who were kind of there handing out, like native New Yorkers who were there handing out socialist pamphlets and stuff. And then he uses this to motivate talking about, you know, what's going on with Bitcoin. But he transitions to talking about Bitcoin through by talking about Larry Fink, because Larry Fink was involved, I think, in handing out the money to financial institutions during the bailouts. So Larry Fink was appointed as the like point man for distributing the money, which financial institutions should get bailed out and which ones shouldn't. I don't know if he was at BlackRock then, but he was at an MBS firm prior to being the CEO of BlackRock. And so he's chosen to handle funds for the bailouts. And then he went on to run BlackRock.
The rest is history.
Yeah. But he discusses that because to point out that he quotes Larry Fink saying that he's aware of how bad their handling of the bailout funds were and how not like both optically and otherwise, it's like it didn't help normal people. But yeah, it didn't really change the results any, but he at least acknowledged it at some point. And then he kind of ends this section about Larry Fink talking about how, you know, he's now very pro Bitcoin and manages the largest ETF and encourages us to view, you know, people like Larry Fink with skepticism, because they, you know, they are extremely conflicted. If not, operating in bad faith altogether. So Larry Fink is in charge of the biggest Bitcoin ETF. Is he going to do the right thing in the case where something happens with the big Bitcoin ETF, given that he, you know, failed to do it during the bailouts? Probably won't. But he says all of this to encourage us to use Bitcoin the right way. Take custody of Bitcoin yourself, learn how Bitcoin works, learn how to be your own bank and not farm it out to people like Larry Fink, who you should know you cannot trust. This is not what adoption looks like is kind of the main point. The ETFs are not what a Bitcoin adoption looks like.
Cool. We had the top comment from Scoresby. Some good reminders here. I suspect the SN as a group of Bitcoin is probably the least likely to be holding ETF shares and believing in 40HS, yet complacency does slip up on us if we aren't careful. Billy the Kid said Bitcoin subculture is as significant as its moneyness. Optism said Coinbase is reputable. And then he says, since when? Just because they say maintain an image that they are doesn't mean they actually are, even if we'll stay reputable. There's a lot of comments here. It's like 101 comments, which is, yeah.
Yeah, they really got into it.
Everybody talked about it. There's that really notable paper clipping.
It's in the op return and the first Coinbase output. Mm.
Chancellor on the brink of second bailout for banks. Billions. Wow. Only billions back then. Now it's like trillions. You think we'll break 100 trillion before the end of the decade?
100 trillion in debt?
Yeah.
Oh.
We're at 38, I think. We're probably at 39 now.
I would guess so. It seems to be going at that rate. Yeah, exponentials are hard, but yeah. I would say
because we're in 20,
it'll be higher than you would think it will be. It's not going to be linear. It's not going to be linear.
200.
Yeah.
I'm going to go over 100 before the end of the decade.
For the end of the decade. The end of the decade meaning by 2030?
Yeah. I'm going to go over 100 trillion.
Okay. I think that's a fair bet. I think you could probably make a really strong case that'll happen, like even with numbers and stuff.
Yeah. Let's hope we're still alive. We'll see.
Bro, it's so dark. Of course we'll be alive. We'll be thriving in our
Bitcoin citadels that we build at the bottom of the ocean. Oh, hey, all you guys are talking about, I'm going to go into the middle of a country and set up, buy some farmland. Bro, the middle, how about the bottom of the ocean? They're never going to get you there.
That's where all the UFOs are.
That's right, dude. And we don't know that they're hiding well. Those might not even be UFOs. Those might just be Bitcoiners already. Yeah, those are that's
the future Bitcoiners, yeah, those, coming back from the future.
Yeah, those Tic Tac UFOs. That's Satoshi, dude.
dodging all the feds. Oh, yeah. Of course, he's gonna fly by.
Yeah,
Satoshi, bro. That's awesome. All right, that's all the top stories of the week here on Stacker.News. We're gonna jump into the AI Bitcoin segment. Let's jump into this one before we get into the fun stuff. Did you see the Genesis mission that your boy Trump signed?
Yeah, I looked in. So the weird thing about this is I saw this story getting circulated, but I was like, they signed this executive order like I felt like a while ago. No, but it says the 24th.
There. Yeah, it says the 24th. Okay. So this post was from, I don't know where this post came from, but it showed up on Stacker News. I guess it's from the same guy. Yeah. It was a really good post. Like, it was a really, this is something that you would expect from like The Rage or something, but I read through it. He's basically talking about how he foresees a time when a lot of these, or let me just start with the context. So the Genesis mission is what Trump is calling the kind of like the Apollo mission or the Manhattan Project, but for AI, quantum, and everything that the future is hopefully going to provide for
buzzwords.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. David Sachs's book.
Basically. Sure. anyway, so long story short, he goes into this kind of like hypothetical, you know, there's going to be a bailout coming for a lot of this stuff. And then, so he kind of talks about this in a context of like, we've seen COVID-19, we've seen the Manhattan Project, look at how this turned out. It actually didn't turn out for the better. It just basically made this kind of nanny state, or not nanny state, this nanny government for all these, how would you say? They just basically made these,
they corrupted nuclear technology, basically.
Yeah, but they just made Boeing, and they're all just kind of they're just zombies. They're not like there's literally no competition with any of these companies. They're just straight handing money over every year.
Kind of techno fascism. Like, this is like what when you look at airliners now, that's the result of like techno fascism 50 years ago.
Yeah, I love that word.
Okay.
So they're talking about how right now, currently with OpenAI and HSBC, had these projections that they came out. They're saying that it's very likely that OpenAI is not going to be able to like hit their their growth targets that they're trying to hit. Because I think they're running at a loss, but it's like a humongous loss. And even like Sam went on record, I think like 2 weeks ago with Satya. It was like circulating around the internet, this video of him, and it was got posted on Stacker News. I think I talked about it too, but it was a really interesting video where he was the guy who was asking him. He was also an investor with OpenAI, and Satya was on there too. And then eventually Sam just like said, "Hey, if you want to sell your shares, let me know. I can find somebody to buy your shares." But so all this to say, and he goes into this article talking about how it's very likely that they're not going to be able to hit all the revenue that they're out there trying to do, because you have NVIDIA already invested into a lot of these companies, already, you know, buying some of the compute for a lot of these companies, already doing their best to kind of bubble up these already existing AI companies. So he's predicting that David Sachs is going to do like this bailout because it only lasted like 18 days or something like that previously. And then he goes into this other thing about how he foresees like the surveillance state coming because of this like Genesis mission that Trump is putting together. And he sees that there's going to be a panopticon of these companies. There's going to be no competition. You're going to get rid of all of these early stage AI companies that would have been created. And you're going to be able to, you're going to see just nothingness. And this is actually going to be bad for AI in the long term. And I think I covered everything. Yeah, I think that's where he kind of goes with that. Keon, did you read this post? Did you see it?
No, so I thought, for some reason, I thought this was like old news, and I was like, bro, I can't. I'm not about to read some old news. Nothing happened with regard to this, because I would expect it to have heard about it if it really mattered, but I guess it was new news. I mean, I haven't looked at it too much. I do remember that clip circulating about Sam Altman, you know, kind of falling off a podcast because he didn't want to answer a question about their profitability. I think the way you hear Mark Zuckerberg saying he's open to wasting hundreds of billions of dollars pursuing AGI because he believes it's worth the risk. And so I think that's what you're seeing with Altman. He can kind of go to investors and he's like, yeah, there's, you know, potentially like, yes, our revenue is way behind where it needs to be to make this money back, but the upside is infinity. Like if we get to AGI first and we are just that much farther ahead than everyone else, and we are, you know, literally running the entire economy with our replicatable brains, no one's going to be able to catch up to us. We're going to be the gods of the new era. Don't you want a share in the new god? I think that's like kind of what it seems. Yeah. That's I think the pitch, and it's a, you know, it's a pretty compelling pitch if you believe that that's actually what's going to happen with AGI.
Well, he, in his pitch deck, I don't know if you remember his pitch deck. His pitch deck literally had one of his hockey stick charts in his pitch deck was the Earth's GDP. It wasn't just like the United States GDP. It was like the Earth's GDP. That was one of his slides in his deck. I just thought, I was like, wow, that was such a just like a crazy maneuver to put that in there. It was just insane. Right here, this is where it says, so in the article, he goes into from innovation to extraction, and he talks about the Genesis mission. So in this part specifically, he says, this extraction will intensify as bailouts become routine. Each time AI companies face shortfalls, they'll demand federal assistance. Each time the government provides relief, dependency deepens. Eventually, the industry becomes indistinguishable from defense contractors, nominally private but functionally integrated into government, surviving through political connections rather than market performance. And that's the scary part, is because then you're kind of going into this, like, you know, if you serve the right master, if you serve the right, you have the right network, you are at the right cocktail party. You know what I mean? Then it just becomes, you're not even actually competing with anybody out there in the ecosystem. You're literally just attending these things, and then you get the, you know, you appease the room, and now you're in the golden in that kind of golden group. So it's man, it sucks, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. So my view on this, if this is actually what happens in the U.S., I think the U.S. just won't be competitive in AI.
But there's no one else, though. It's just literally China, and they're communistic, and then Europe's not participating. And then, so who else do you have? We've seen the charts, we've seen the map. Remember, like, we've had multiple segments here on Stacker News Live where we've seen the map of AI, and it hasn't really taken off anywhere else.
I don't know. I think you have India. You have, which also is, I think, competitive in this regard. Lots of people. You know, very very fast growing. I think there are parts of Africa that can maybe. They obviously don't have the same kind of tech sectors. I mean, the U.S. is, of course, leading kind of right now, and China's kind of competitive in that regard. But, if the U.S. stagnates, if China stagnates because the state is, like, too intermingled with these things, I think all that happens is it opens up for someone else to innovate in the area. So long as whoever is the world power doesn't strangle everyone else's innovation, and that seems to be what sort of happened with planes. Because the U.S. is like sort of, you know, the global leader. They're kind of in control of the world order. And they are the ones kind of producing most of the planes or designing them. It seems that we hadn't had much innovation in planes. And you can kind of imagine the same thing might happen with AI, where, like, you know, OpenAI perhaps helps them, you know, as a result of riding this bubble, they get way ahead. And then they are so far ahead that they have so much power that they can kind of, like, stifle competition globally. That's, you know, that could happen.
I would say it's more akin to, I wouldn't say like planes. I would say more like like kind of like rocketry or like space flight or like
I think nuclear is
like,
maybe
probably. Yeah, like
I think people view it best. That's best.
Yeah, because you could dangerous. You could even argue like some of this UFO technology that people are seeing out there is actually just the United States government and its black budget, right? Like that's where like I would automatically assume like this is where this could go. Like we're gonna talk about another post later on, but like let's just say hypothetically they do have some interesting things that they could build later on and that the people that are out there don't know about, all of a sudden you have like some AI virus that hits and everybody can't solve it because they're working on like 10 years backward technology. And these are all hypotheticals, but it just leaves this widened gap and it just stunts humanity, just to put it frankly, like it stunts humanity's growth and it doesn't move us forward. If anything, it just keeps us in the kind of reductive state that we've been in since like what, and who was making this eloquent argument? Like what, like 20, like, wasn't it one of the guys from, who's that guy that you and Jenna watch, Weinstein? Wasn't he talking about this deductive state that the United States is in and it has been in for like 30, 40 years because no one's actually like create anything? But it probably is because we're in this kind of like a place where they're not sharing the information. They're not sharing any of the technology that could probably move this stuff forward.
Yeah, so that's like Thiel's point that Eric Weinstein also, you know, puts forward is that since like the early 1970s, productivity has not really grown much. We've been kind of stagnating and there's been lots of kind of like financial and sort of digital innovation, but the world that we maybe care about most, the world of atoms, has not really grown. And this is kind of this is also something Peter Thiel talks about, or maybe he's tying more recently into his Antichrist lectures, which is, you know, part one of his theories as to why we stopped growing in the 1970s was because technology got too dangerous. And, you know, kind of the either our collective human sentiment about it was that this is scary and we need to stop and stay away from it. Or, you know, perhaps like kind of governments or world leaders sort of saw the risks of technology kind of getting into the wrong hands. Especially nuclear technology, we began to get really afraid of nuclear technology because we saw how destructive it was. Perhaps there was a little bit, we were kind of getting in the way of our own success, stopping us from continuing to innovate in these areas that were terrifying to us. And he used, like, part of what he uses is like a stand-in for how we maybe unconsciously held these beliefs is how most of our like sci-fi and stuff became dystopian. Like it stopped being about like, you know, it wasn't like Star Trek. We're going to, you know, travel the world and travel the universe and meet new species. It became more like there was a nuclear war and only 10 people survived and the rest of them are zombies or whatever. Like that's like most of the sci-fi that we have now. Anyway, yeah. So I think that is going to happen with AI. I think that is.
Like, I mean, it just got signed into law and like he's going to benefit from it. Like Palantir is actually going to be one of those companies that is going to benefit from this. And we'll see what other ones that SAX allows. But it's kind of a bummer, man.
Yeah. But I think when I looked into the Genesis stuff, I think part of it was that it was the government was, there might be funding stuff, but the part that I was interested in was the data. I think part of it was like the government will now go out of its way to kind of make the data publicly, all of its like National Science Foundation data and other data that was kind of, you know, inaccessible. They're going to give privileged access to a few companies, or maybe perhaps they have some application process so that they can train models on it. And, you know, they're basically trying to give United States AI companies a lead. But I think where this eventually ends is, you know, AI is going to be an existential risk. It's going to be a weapon. And so eventually the
government is going to get super involved in it anyway. And if I don't know if you remember Leopold Bonaparte's paper, and he did a great podcast with that AI podcast guy who's like the most popular one, but he that's like it, part of how he sees the next decade or so going with AI is eventually it becomes very risky. Like the technology becomes extremely secretive because you're afraid that an enemy is going to come in possession of the technology, and then you know they're going to be, you know, even a few months ahead of you is it potentially risk them destroying you. And so that's how these people are thinking about this stuff, is like, we just have to get there first. It doesn't matter how we get there, you know. We create all kinds of bubbles, all kinds of distortions in the market. It is existential that the U.S. succeeds at getting there first. And I think that's just, you know,
rabbit. I think it was going to happen either way. I don't think it mattered who was elected or anything like that. And because the piece even talks about it. But so I think the Genesis mission was going to happen regardless of who got elected.
But Trump does it in a very gaudy fashion. You know, he wraps it in 24 karat gold, like gold leaf, like that. Everything he does is like, yeah, buddy, this is what we're doing. I think, you know, when other presidents do this kind of thing, at least my impression of it was sort of like it was done in a whisper. It's like, yeah, we're partnering with these guys over here, and they, you know, it had more code. But Trump is like, we need to do this, otherwise, you know, for the U.S. needs to win. We're going to be winners. And so I think that's why, but it's good because it alerts more of the general public to kind of what's going on in the government, how kind of weird, how much power it exercises.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem with this, and maybe you can clue me in on this, I think the biggest problem whenever you put everything under the guise of one nation like this, there's always like crevices and leaks and cracks, and what ends up happening is you have like one thing, like kind of like the Death Star. It's like one thing that can actually topple the whole thing down, and that's the scary part. I don't think people pay too much attention to, but if you look through history, it's always been like that. Anyways, that's a really good article. Genesis Mission, definitely read it. It's definitely worth reading. The other one I want to bring up was actually before I bring this up, because it kind of ties into the whole Genesis Mission. I want to jump to one of my posts real quick. It was, so the cryptographer DJ Bernstein criticizes push to finalize post-quantum cryptography. This is not really a post-quantum cryptography post. This is more about Dan Bernstein. So Dan Bernstein, if you've never heard of him before, he is a, here, let me see if I can read this correctly, make sure I get it right. He designed the SALSA 20 stream cipher in 2005, and then he also was the one who proposed the elliptic curve 25519 as a basis for public key schemes. And since 2014, when OpenSSH is compiled with OpenSSL, they power most of its operators. OpenBSD packaging signing is based on ED25519. So this guy is a very big person in the cryptography field. Mm-hmm. So the US, the NSA is, this post is from Brent. He posted on Stacker News. I don't think it got any attention at all. But what's interesting is this one guy single-handedly kind of stepping up to the United States government. And this was on Slashdot. Remember Slashdot? So in October, Daniel Bernstein alleged that the America's National Security Agency were attempting to influence NIST to adopt weaker post-quantum cryptography standards without a hybrid approach that would have also included pre-quantum elliptic curve cryptography. Bernstein is of the opinion that given how many post-quantum proposals have been broken and the continuing flood of side channel attacks, any competent engineering evaluation will conclude that the best way to deploy post-quantum encryption for TLS and for the internet more broadly is as double encryption for post-quantum cryptography on top of ECC. But he says he's seen it playing out differently, and he goes into it. But he also shares concerns about how the Internet Engineering Task Force is handling the discussion and argues that the document is even out of scope. So he's basically saying that the NSA and the United States government is purposely putting kind of similar to what we were just talking about with the Genesis mission, is like they're purposely working down, or how would you say it? they are weakening the cryptography so that way they can then exploit it later on. And this is, and he's talking about this publicly, so much so that he actually is suing them in court, and it's in the Wikipedia. And then this is from what Brent said. He said, the NSA has a history of international sabotage of cryptography standards, giving themselves and other adversaries sly backdoor access to presumed private communications. So I thought this was insane. I've never heard of such a thing, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely heard of such a thing. I don't remember where I encountered this idea first. I mean, it just kind of makes sense. You have a standards body that, you know, is centralized and corruptible. And so, you know, if you're the NSA, why wouldn't you go in there and try to put your own backdoors that are specific to you into it? I forget where I first encountered this stuff, but yeah, I mean, it just kind of makes sense. Like if you can put yourself in the shoes of the NSA for a second, it's exactly what you'd want to do.
Yeah, so just wanted to bring it to everybody's attention because I think it's pretty concerning as somebody who just heard about this today. I was just like, damn. So when you couple that with the Genesis mission, like things get really dark. Goob. Things get really dark.
I wouldn't pair them together. Like that would be a dinner I would eat, you know? Like
I want to talk to this guy though. I want to talk to this guy. This Dan guy. Or Daniel guy. I want to talk to him.
Yeah.
Why
doesn't he have a podcast?
I mean, he should be on podcasts talking about this. Anyways, somebody get him on a show or something. Get him on What Bitcoin Did or something, because like I feel like this is important. This is really important, and we should be talking about this. Anyways. So, yeah, let's jump back into the other. So we can get into like the normal post now. So the other one I want to show was the RizBot versus iShowSpeed. So apparently there's a this thing happened in Austin, believe it or not. Did you see? I posted this on. There's this robot here, that was kind of set loose in Austin, and apparently he's suing, or not the robot, but the company. That guy right there is suing this influencer for attacking his robot. So here it goes right here. You'll see him. Yeah, there goes the affidavit. Look this. So. Yeah, here it goes right here. So he's like pretending to box him. And then look, he just like, oh, I guess the robot tripped him. I didn't even see that. Oh, here it goes right here. Watch. So the guy gets mad. And hang on, let me see. Yeah, okay, so look. So this is what he does. He punches him. And he broke his neck. I think he even bent his face in a little bit. Yeah, and then look. At least just starts beating him up. What do you think about that? Is this a hate crime?
I don't think so. I think, isn't iShowSpeed like one of those, like...
I don't know who this guy is.
He's like, he has all the energy of something like TMZ, but he's like in a person. Like always like lots of like manufactured kind of...
His face is damaged. Johnny Five, dude. Johnny Five is not alive. Isn't that crazy though?
I mean, it's silly. I don't...
But look, so they're actually suing that influencer.
Well, yeah, he did damage to their property.
I know, but look, but they're saying that it's like, and then the APD got involved.
I know, but it said, I guess, well, it looks like maybe they purchased one of these robots and then they're.
It did look like the robot, if you go back to the video, it did look like he like tripped them though in the beginning. Did you see that? Look right there, look, he assaulted him first. Look, boom, he punched him.
No, I think...
I don't know, man. I think
he... No, it's teleoperated.
No, look. But he assaulted him first. Look.
The robot isn't a he. There's a person who's in control of the robot.
Look, the robot assaulted him. Look, right here it goes. Look, the robot assaulted
him. He's in control of the robot. There's someone on his team in control of the robot swinging it.
No, but I'm saying, like, if it's an assault...
It's not an assault.
The robot assaulted him. Look, right here.
No, it didn't. That's what I'm saying.
Look right here.
I get what you're saying. I've already described...
Boom, he hit him.
It's
now he can hit him back.
iShowSpeed, whatever his name is, someone on his team is the one who's in control of the robot.
I don't know, man. I feel like the robot got what he deserved. Look at this. He broke his face, though, dude. He probably punches really hard. That's metal. Look. Isn't that crazy? He broke it. Look, he bent his face in. Dang.
So I don't, it looks, based on what I can see in the article, it looks like the company is suing mostly for reputational, like on reputational damages, like for reputational damages.
I feel like this is all just a really good publicity stunt. Because even if you lose, you still got the juice from everybody talking
about it. Worth the lawyer fees.
Anyways, I thought that was hilarious. The other thing I wanted to bring up, and this is the last one, was Texas. I don't know if you saw this. Hang on, let me go here. Texas becomes the first U.S. state to buy Bitcoin for its treasury. Did you see this?
I heard it got bought ETF shares.
Our boy Lee, got them to buy. First state to purchase Bitcoin with $10 million investment on November 20th. Got the comptroller to buy it. It's through BlackRock. So there you go.
Oh, you know. Yeah. So it's in good and safe hands.
There you go, Larry Fink.
But it says they're eventually going to do self-custody. I've heard rumors that they'll.
Texas purchased $5 million on November 20th. $10 million is allocated. Isn't that crazy?
That is interesting. Where did the $10 million come from?
What do you mean?
I don't know. Like, where did they get it? Whose money are they spending?
I think it's in here in the article.
It's not like Greg Abbott. He didn't, like, take it out of his bank account, right? Or maybe Dorsey donated it? I mean, that's where a lot of the money
is. I think it came from... Yeah, Abbott signed it into law in June. I would guess they
levied it in the form of taxes.
Where is it? Texas Bitcoin Reserves. Let me see. Where is it? So it's probably just the comptroller, right? So it had to be taxes.
Yeah. So they took money from people. So rather than letting those people keep the money and store it in Bitcoin themselves, they're going to steal it from them.
I think that's big news, dude.
I mean,
you don't think it's big news?
It's big news. Oh, congratulations, the state of Texas.
I think it's big news
for stealing money and buying Bitcoin with it rather than doing other things with it.
You know? I mean, that's just proves that Texas is the place to be. I mean, yes, it is BlackRock, right? Like Siggy was saying, but
I think it's still worth
bringing up on the show, I think. Or would you say no, not bring it up?
Oh, I think it is news. I think it's
worth, news,
but I don't think it's anything to be, it doesn't make exact sense to be proud of. It's like,
how much Bitcoin is that? 5 million?
I don't know. It's like a sailor's weekly buy.
It's only like probably like 50 Bitcoin. Yeah. We'll see. Anyways, that was the last one that I had. Do you want to get into Wumble's picks before we get to your picks?
Sure. I actually didn't spend much time on this, so we'll do a bit of
Wumble's picks. This is Wumble's picks. Wumble's picks. His picks was get instant disposable email addresses powered by Bitcoin Lightning Network. This is from Supratic. Did you see this post? The LN email?
Yeah, I think this project has been around for a while. At least I recall it being mentioned somewhere. Before. There's a lot of these really cool, like lightning powered.
Yeah, we used to see a lot of these, right? Back in 21.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, there was the guy who had the fax service, was cool.
That was really
cool. He recently released a postcard service.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, which is really cool. But in this case, it's email. And Wumbo wants us to, you pay with a bit of Bitcoin on Lightning, and you can get a private email address and send and receive from it. I don't know exactly what the rates are, but I would guess
it's blocked.
It's probably based somewhat on usage. So like the number of emails you're receiving and sending. But you know, you can get access to a throwaway email address, which is nice. So Wumbo asks, would more of these types of services that only accept Bitcoin encourage more people to use Bitcoin?
I think so.
I think, yeah, if there's no other way to get the service, or especially for privacy-focused services, I think it would encourage more people to use Bitcoin. Is this what mass adoption is going to be made of? Probably not, unless we're in a world where lots of people want privacy and therefore need to kind of use these services like this. I mean, even something like Square switching over, even if all of its merchants switched over Bitcoin payments, I don't think that would be a mass adoption event either. I still think Gresham's Law is in play, where I think what people are going to spend their fiat until they only have Bitcoin, basically. So we might never get there, but at least what's nice about Square's thing is it's making more people acquainted with Bitcoin. The merchants are now, they'll get a little bit of Bitcoin, it'll go up in value, they'll become Bitcoiners. And so I think it will snake its way as sort of a savings technology. And I don't think it's even there. We haven't fully saturated the market in terms of savings technology. Anyway, so that's roughly my answer to that question. I don't know if you had a take on that question, Carr.
No, I think like a lot, we were talking about Nostr earlier, right? And I think some of the cool things that are happening on Nostr, like if you just got rid of the Nostr piece, which is a lot of friction, and you just left the Lightning stuff, I think you would have a lot more people using your app personally. I think one of the things that like Nostr does is introduce a lot of friction, and it's not a popular take that I'm saying right now, and people will hate me for saying it, but it's just true. And this is a perfect example of like not having Nostr integration. I'm not saying not to ever have it. I'm just saying like it just makes things very easy for the average person just to go over there and to use it without having to figure out what an NSEC is and like all that stuff and log in and then download a thing. And then before you know, you're just like going to give up because it's just like too much work. When in reality, one of the cool things about Stacker.news early on was just like scanning the thing with the Lightning wallet and then logging in. That was really cool. But we're not there yet with Nostr, and maybe we'll be there in the future. But I think one of the cool things about having more Lightning and Bitcoin apps is that you don't have to have an identity to use it. And I miss those days.
Yeah. I think I hear your point. I think where you're especially right is where I see people building apps that don't even really leverage Nostr in any significant way. They don't really take advantage of what Nostr is for, yet they're building it on Nostr. And so they're kind of like limiting their access to a broader market by requiring people to also be familiar with Nostr to use their product.
Which no one's going to use.
Which is just, I think it's
not
just,
yet.
It's just too early. But but I do think there's, of course, a bunch of benefits to Nostr in general. But yeah, it is nice to see a good old fashioned service using Bitcoin that doesn't exist within one ecosystem and have like require you to adopt a paradigm. Like it requires a paradigm.
It's shift. Not even a paradigm shift. It's a whole narrative.
Yeah.
Well, you have to adopt the sound money narrative, and that's a whole rabbit hole. And then after you adopt that narrative, then you have to go and adopt this whole like freedom technology narrative, which is a whole nother rabbit hole. And I'm telling you, man, it's just not possible. It's not possible. It's two rabbit holes. Let's just be real about what's going on here. There's two rabbit holes. One rabbit hole at a time. Like, let's just. Like, yeah, I would say Nostr is a great place for a test bed. Like, to go do test bed stuff on there. Like, use it as a good test case study. Vibeco the shit out of it, and then bring it to Bitcoin and Lightning. That's what I would do. That's what I would recommend.
Okay. Well,
anyways.
That was it. Yeah, a bit of a tangent, but that's roughly, you know, how do you get people to use Bitcoin? We can kind of, you know, we'd see early signs of Bitcoin like adoption things with Nostr. And so that's how that might tie in. And the other question Wumbo had was, do you guys have any other services powered by Lightning that you wish someone would build or create? Now this makes me wish I had read these questions earlier because I could have thought about
all the ones that are in Nostr, just bring them over to Bitcoin and Lightning only. That's what I would say.
Well, what's your favorite one, or what's one on?
So I would say the Nostr ones that do it really well. These are the ones that do it really well where you don't even realize that you're using Nostr.
Mm.
So like Wavelake, so like Fountain, so like, you know, like those right off the bat do it really well where you don't even realize that you're using Nostr.
Mm.
So I think if you're gonna build something, build it to where you don't even know that you're using. I would even argue Primal, you don't even probably notice that you're using Noster on Primal. I would note it. Unless you, the only reason that you know that you're using Noster is because everybody's saying Noster, Noster, Noster. But if you just, you're the average person, you wouldn't even notice that you're using, they wouldn't even know that they're using Noster. And I think you need to build more apps that are just like Lightning only, Bitcoin only.
Okay, but he's
bring
asking,
those over.
He's asking specifically one would, someone would build or create that would be powered by Lightning. And so you've listed ones that are already powered by Lightning.
Which one would I love to see? I want to see a telehealth app that is Bitcoin Lightning only.
Okay, telehealth. Okay, so you want to pay a doctor, a remote doctor, to diagnose you and prescribe you medication and pay them with Lightning.
Yeah.
That's what you want to see.
Yep.
Okay. That's pretty specific. I don't know exactly what I want yet. I haven't thought about this really at all.
Because I think people are still thinking too social. It's like too social stuff. It's like let's figure out how to make revenue generating businesses. And I think the telehealth app is really hard because it's a two-sided marketplace. But you could see a world where if you slowly build that out and you have like one or two doctors in a region or even a city, you could have like a good group. You don't even need to be a telehealth app. It could be like a telework app. You know, maybe your favorite mechanic or something. It could basically be like a Craigslist for Lightning and Bitcoin.
I would love, like, I think what I'm begun to think about is maybe like some kind of package delivery. This is like a problem that we have with Stacker News, where we want to send things to stackers, maybe because they've, you know, as just like sort of a prize or a reward for doing certain things on Stacker News. And a lot of them don't want to give out their addresses rightfully. But it'd be kind of cool if they could set up some kind of mailbox, some kind of service that we pay, they're like a forwarding service, and we actually mail packages to the service, and that stacker can set it up there. We pay money to that service to forward the package onto the stacker, maybe. I don't know how that would work exactly. But
yeah, I feel like once you get the real world involved, you're like asking for all sorts of legal trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's kind of what I want. That's where Bitcoin becomes exciting.
Yeah, but you just can't do that with like money and then under the authoritarian regime that we're in, which is the United States of America. Like you can't mix those two things, man. You're just asking to go to, you know. Maybe in a different country, I would say you're probably able to do that. Maybe I just don't think you can do that in America and get away with it, because they're gonna pop you for like something. Somebody's gonna be a bozo and like send, you know, drugs or something.
Yeah, I mean that's fair, but I don't.
Then you're gonna go to jail for holding the bag, you know.
I don't know, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know of any. So I'd have to think about this more to really figure it out. But I love these micro SaaS. This is kind of how I would describe them, that are powered by Lightning. And they're probably pretty lean. There's another one called like Sats Host.
Like a Gumroad? Like a Gumroad?
It's not Gumroad. It's like it's a static website hoster. Mm-hmm. And you pay with Lightning, I believe, or maybe on-chain Bitcoin you can pay with too, but you pay a very small amount. And they'll statically host your website for you.
I told Justin from ShockNet that he needs to build like a kind of like just a product inventory, so that way people, kind of like a McDonald's menu where you like select what you want and then just a QR thing pops up and you just pay it. So we can have that for the hackerspace where you just like you pick a thing and then you just pay it and then pops up and pays it. Like it's basically like a McDonald's kiosk basically. And I want to do that with just like Lightning. It doesn't need to keep inventory track or anything like that. It's just for the fridge and snacks and stuff.
Oh.
And I was telling him, I was like, man, dude, you should just build one of those and I would totally use it.
I imagine Ellenbits has something like that. I bet Darth Corn.
Yeah, but Ellenbits is.
Ellenbits is?
Ellenbits.
Ellenbits is.
Ellenbits. Anyways, but I think that would be really cool. But I don't want to use like, you know, I want to use something that's going to work. You know, anyways.
Burn.
Cool stuff. Wumble's picks. Wumble's picks. He picks some and we talk about them. And it's always a spicy one, just like today's. We're going to jump into Keon's picks if he has any.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Sure. What was your pick?
One of the picks is from South Korea, LN. They went to Hawaii and...
Was it this week?
Yeah. And my second shop to pay with Lightning in Hawaii, I think...
Oh, there it goes.
The week before they went and bought coffee, I think they found some Square merchants that had turned on Bitcoin on their terminals. Oh, and so they, cool. They bought coffee last week. And this week he went to a ukulele shop. You know, if you're going to buy a ukulele, better do it in Hawaii, because that's kind of, I think that's like the origin of the instrument. And so he bought two ukuleles in Hawaii and was able to pay with Bitcoin. Huh?
Was he able to bring them back?
Why wouldn't they let him?
Oh, cool.
He didn't fill them with drugs, I imagine.
Whoa.
Or anything like that. That's, I mean.
Or sand.
I mean, it's not a bad idea, but like grow some good chiba out there, you know what I mean?
Dude, when I went to Hawaii, we went to Maui when I was like, I think I was like 20. Like 20? I think I was like 20. And this was before 9/11. And the people that I was with, they were able to sneak marijuana over the plane. This is how easy it was back then, pre 9/11. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, that is fun. But when I was smoking a lot of weed, I would fly with like a couple joints in my bag.
Really?
Yeah, no problem.
Oh wow. Do they not check?
I don't think they care. I think they might have seen him in the scanner, but wow. I have like a couple of joints. What are you gonna do?
No, but back then, and I didn't smoke, but I still don't smoke. But he brought like a pipe and a bag. It was a bag. It was like,
yeah, flying with
paraphernalia. It was a bag. It was just like, damn, bro.
Yeah, like, he brought like a kit.
Yeah, he brought like a kit. I was just like, dang, that's a lot of marijuana. Like, how did you do that? But it was, I guess he wanted to have a good time.
Yeah, I don't. You really don't need that much weed to have a good time unless you have like very high tolerance. But he bought some ukuleles. I imagine he's going to, if he's not living in Hawaii, I imagine he's going to take them back with him. He said that he said that the person who was manning the counter was, I think he thought it was the owner's wife, who wasn't actually familiar with the Bitcoin part, so he had to kind of encourage them.
Was this in? I wonder if it was in Honolulu. They have a big they have a meetup and everything. What's her name? They have a I forget her name, but she like runs their community over there in Honolulu. I forget.
Okay,
her name.
I don't. The shop's name is called Best Hawaii Ukulele.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but there's like a bunch of Bitcoiners in Hawaii though.
Oh, I'd believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we knew some who used to be there.
Cool stuff. What was the other one you had?
The other one was Elvis Mercury shared a post, The Shape of the Game We Play.
Shape of the Game We Play? Where's that one at?
It's right. It's above you. It's up there. It's like top six, I think six.
Oh, this one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this one. So this article is about... the author argues that you can learn a lot by reading business biographies, or you can save yourself a lot of time, like making mistakes running a business by reading a lot of business biographies. And they kind of discuss that point. I guess they got some pushback in a comment in one of their blogs about it, where a guy is like, there are some things you cannot learn by reading. And I think the commenter used weightlifting as an example. It's like, you can read books about weightlifting all day, but at some point you kind of have to get in the gym, and that's, you know, there's a lot you learn there that you just cannot translate into a book form. It is a lossy transform. Elvis uses this to, part of what the person who wrote this post describes is that we get kind of part of the problem with, you know, only going to the gym and never reading the book is you kind of are stuck with the limited experience that you have while you're doing it, like, which is not going to be very thorough. It's not going to be, you know, a weightlifting book will probably explore lots of different theories on weightlifting and lots of different research articles. But if you only go to a gym, you might just adopt the weightlifting strategy of your friend, or, you know, better cases, maybe you have a personal trainer, but they might not themselves have read all the weightlifting books. But Elvis just uses that to describe how our view of things is like limited, and we are kind of blind to things. And we can get really stuck in assuming things in the future are going to be the same the same as the way we've experienced them. And it says here at the bottom, ZERP is kind of one thing that's at the beginning of the article. The author talks a lot about how they kind of came up during a zero interest rate period in tech, and how they were like surprised when interest rates started going up in 2022, and how a lot of the practices that were done at the startups and tech companies that they occupied had, you know, changed dramatically as a result of that. And they were like not prepared for that. They just assumed that was the way things were done.
I would even argue, we were just talking about it at the beginning of the show, but I would even argue like even the Bitcoin ecosystem, like before the ETF, was completely different than the post ETF. And that was something that took me by surprise personally. I never expected, like I knew like everything was going to change. I just didn't expect the business side of the ecosystem to change that abruptly and that different post Bitcoin ETF. And that's kind of what's taken me by surprise, is just how much everything has changed post, I guess, the beginning of 2024 when it went through. And
I think I was surprised by the degree to which people's attention follows the money. Like I knew the money would flow to the ETF, but I didn't think people who were previously interested in the technology stuff and the cypherpunky things would just have their attention get redirected to like Bitcoin bonds and ETFs and, you know, treasuries and strategic reserves. But that appears to be what happened. So I was definitely surprised by that. I was not surprised by the tech. One of the articles I've been sharing with a lot of founders more recently is Paul Graham's article, Default Alive, where he argues like kind of the main, you know, kind of what you always want your startup to be, to not have to make assumptions about your financial future. So you kind of want to prepare maybe for, you know, things not going financially in the right way. And so I've personally operated from the position of the financial future is extremely unpredictable, and I just kind of have to, if I can't assume the best, rosiest outcome financially, how would I run this business and make it work? Anyway, it's a great article. It references a lot one of the popular Toyota manufacturing books. I think it's like something Lean. I forget the exact name, but you know how they.
The birth of Lean, right there.
Yes, the birth of Lean. And there's a lot of cool stuff. A lot of the stuff was invented in Japan in there, because they were like the major manufacturer for the United States as we transitioned to consumers. And so there's a lot of this stuff was invented there.
I would even say it's even more important now, kind of just what you said about the whole default alive thing. It's even more important now because what you have is like this whole class of just, I don't want to call them zombie companies because it's such a buzzword, but you have this whole class of people and companies that are just, you know, propped up by the government or by their own little kind of group, and the game is no longer
Space Ted.
The game is no longer being played fair.
Oh, Christmas Space Ted.
So
it is not being played fair, the financial side?
No, I'm saying like when you were talking about like the default alive, I would even argue that even now it's even more important to have that kind of framing for your startup, for your company, because the game is not fair anymore. It's not even like we were talking about earlier with the whole AI stuff. Like it's more about who you know and kind of the network that it grows than it has to do with than anything else these days. And it's even gotten worse with that. And it's going to continue to get worse with that. And that was always something that that was always said, oh, you know, your network is your net worth, you know, that kind of thing. But now it's like, that's all you need. I would even argue that's the only thing you need to build a company these days is just your network.
I wonder if there's a more general point, like
social. You don't even need to have revenue anymore. You literally just need the right people in your little kind of network, and that'll get you all the way there. It's kind of sad, but that's where we're at. Because they can fake revenue now. I mean, that's literally what NVIDIA is doing, or that's what that article says that NVIDIA is doing.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I'm curious if there's like a more general point to be made about social systems trend towards politicization. Like maybe there's a popular article article that I really like called Geeks, Mops, and Sociopaths.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's about this kind of like subculture evolution. And I wonder, like, it kind of describes a transition where you have a very meritocratic kind of subculture that eventually becomes like heavily politicized or like co-opted by sociopaths, basically. But that I think that is just like a politicization process that happens in a social system, and that appears to be kind of what's happened in Bitcoin, and as a result of maybe. Maybe it's the ETFs.
The ETF.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it definitely
the ETF. Yeah, it's the ETF. I wouldn't put any other blame on it anywhere else. And that's fine. It's just what it is. It's just that was the thing that kind of took me by surprise. I knew it was going to change things. I just didn't realize it was going to change things from the inside that much. And it's even gotten the builders to quit. Like, you're even seeing less and less Bitcoin Lightning builders than ever now. And it's kind of sad because they're just not as many as there once was. Anyways,
I think it'll change.
Yeah, I think it'll change in time. We just got to keep going.
Yeah, I think Bitcoin culture is in a mood of like building doesn't really make sense because we can kind of make money in other ways. I think that's like the mood. That's like the sense that people have about Bitcoin right now.
Yeah. We're in this nanny state everywhere. Cool. I think that's all I got here on... Wait, where is the... okay, let me see here. I think that's all I got. Do you have anything else?
I had two.
Do you have Meta?
I don't think we had Meta this week.
Okay.
We've been doing like bug fixes that we don't announce.
Okay. And then Plepo had her, she's not here today, but she had her Happy Thanksgiving Snacker News zine. Did you take a look at this?
I did take a look at it.
See if the web version
is pretty great. I like fall a lot. I'm a fall girl. I'm a pumpkin spice girl. So I love a good fall theme.
Oh man, it's not loading.
Pumpkin spice
latte. Pumpkin spice latte or...
Oh yeah.
Can you get that? Can you have that hot or no?
Oh, you can definitely have it hot, bro.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Of course, yeah. I mean, you want to warm up.
I like it. Yeah. I like an iced pumpkin spice latte.
Put a fire on your Samsung. Bro. A little pumpkin spice latte.
All right, it's not loading.
Living in the woods.
Anyways, but check it out. Get yours. And it's a festive one on Stacker News. Yeah, it's not loading. Probably because we're streaming. But yeah, look at this.
Look at it. It's got leaves on it. I think those are hand-drawn.
Or they could be real leaves.
But there's also flowers, which conflicts, because you don't really have fall flowering, really, I don't think.
Why embrace the system that Bitcoin was created to destroy? That's the question of the year, I would say.
I think that's probably a quote from Siggy's article about Luke.
And then our perpetual thankfulness. Why are you thankful for?
All of our Thanksgiving posts over the years. Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. And then we're gonna jump into the comments. We had a lot of YouTube comments. One came from this guy about the fleeing your country. He said, "Don't come to Ireland. We are full. You will live in a tent,
bro." Some of us do live in tents, like literally. Like a lot of Bitcoiners don't give a fuck, dude. So.
All right, you heard it here first. And then the other one was from the Societal Decay one. The Mark Andreessen says, "Yeah, it's the wrong side of the meme. She's the bad person in the interview." Was she the bad person in the interview? I guess she was, right?
She was. Yes.
Yeah, so she's the one asking the question.
Yeah, Mark Andreessen shared the picture of the interviewer who is the bad person, and he's kind of using her to represent himself. So I think that's what confused people about the meme.
Yeah. You need to go to bed.
Good point, Twitty.
And then the other one was from No, This Is Zero Need for Bit444. He said, "Ready knots, we the Bitcoiner support Bit444. What do you think about that one?
Well, I don't think COVID is a scam. 4556 speaks for all Bitcoiners. It's a theory I have, but
there you go.
Yeah.
These are all the comments on YouTube, man. There's getting more and more and more comments on YouTube, which is kind of crazy.
Bring it. There's
the Peter Thiel one is like, I want to answer those, but at the same time, I'm just like, there's just too many. to answer those.
There's a certain level of quality of a YouTube comment.
If you come on stacker.news and tag me, I'll answer them.
It's like a what is the hipster beer? Is it Pabst?
Pabst Blue Ribbon?
Yeah, it's like a Pabst Blue Ribbon of comments. Like, that's kind of what you get on YouTube. It's like...
Well, the hipster beer in Austin is Lone Star, so...
Yeah, that's why I forgot about it, because it's been a long time since I've had a Pabst, but...
PBR?
Yeah, PBR. That's another way to describe it.
So, Blockchain Book has said Zap, and then there was a user that's just zapped, and then Undisciplined said, it's communism, car. I think he was talking about the whole Andreessen Horowitz thing.
Maybe. Really?
I don't know. What other thing were we talking about where it was communism?
I don't know, but this is a thing. This is a, I remember, I recall like from a year ago, we were talking about some abandoned housing project in China where you went on a rant about communism. And I was like, well, you know, like, I think you can have this without communism. And then Undisciplined's like, no, Carr's right. It's communism. he might be referencing that.
Do you think the genesis had a similar? Do you think the genesis thing is communism?
The genesis thing,
the genesis mission. Do you think that's communism?
No, I think it's like communism. It's this kind of public private partnership, which they do a lot in one of the leading examples of communism, which is China. So you kind of have this like capitalism for some. Or capitalism with help, capitalism with state, where the state benefits and the company benefits from the state. I think in political science, that's like fascism. That's like the actual definition of fascism, is my understanding. It's like a public private kind of chimera, but that might be wrong too. It might also require social ideology, but
What's your take?
That is my take. It is a fascism of a kind.
That's all we got. Let's jump into the top Cowboys, baby. The top Cowboys of the week here on Stacker.News. Got one in hiding. Coob, Undisciplined, Blockchain Boog.
Gray
Ruby, We Are Satoshi.
Yeah, I don't think we've had much movement since.
I feel like at some point, Undisciplined and Gray Ruby are just going to run Stacker News. I mean, safe to say, right?
Well, they do have two of the most popular territories.
And they do run the most popular podcast on Stacker.News. So
yeah. Makes sense. Do they have better numbers than we do?
I think they do.
Really?
Yeah.
We should have a beef.
I'm perfectly fine them having a way bigger podcast than we do.
I'm perfectly fine with it too, but it'd just be kind of fun to have a beef.
I mean, they did it the right way. They even have sponsorships too.
Really?
Yeah, they have sponsorships. It's because they're not showing their faces.
Oh, it's because then the sponsors don't want to be associated with the people?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. Do you think we were more attractive? That wouldn't matter.
I think I'm very attractive.
We can get Mark.
I think I'm very attractive to the ladies. Like a
Macy's underwear to model. The ladies. You can come in here and.
But you're married, Coop, so you don't really have a.
Yeah, no, I get to look like a slob, and it costs me nothing.
Yeah, optimism, crypto sensei, or cryto sensei. I always say crypto. Scoresby, 117 OT, Machiavelli, Kepford. What else we got? Satwise,
which is Siggy's e-com.
Solomon Satoshi. Siggy
Bezos.
Dr. Brader. Porygon. Carr. Philippe. Sooks. CryptoCoin. Oh, CryptoCoin came back. Well, looks like everybody started updating their profile pictures. I got ShockNet, Dead Beef. Didn't that used to be dad beef, or was it always dead beef?
It was always dead beef, because dead beef you can spell it out in hex.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Roy, CLR, Pleb Poet, Bull Bitcoin, Gary, Bitcoin Search, and Angie. Rounding up the top five. Zapper. Boom. Boom. There you go. I remember that picture. I used to love that one.
Oh, yeah. That's a good meme.
Yeah. Anyways, that's all we got here on Stacker News. Keon, what are you doing this weekend?
What am I doing? We're moving.
Oh, yeah, we're moving.
Moving play. I've packed most of it up. I just have to, like, get the big things ready, I guess.
Yeah, I'm going to pack all the stuff tomorrow.
It didn't take me as long as I thought. It was, like, pretty much, you know, a couple of hours filling boxes. It's not
going to take that much, yeah.
Yeah. Plus, yeah, there's not a whole lot out here.
Yeah. Just going to pack it all up tomorrow.
But that's probably mostly what I'll do. It's got, yeah, family left town.
Oh, they did already?
They're here for 4 days.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so kind of back to my routine and getting.
Were you happy seeing them or no?
Oh, yeah, it was great. I love seeing them. I love seeing my wife's, family. They're great, good people. And Tom is a Bitcoiner now.
So
I made him.
He almost won the, whole Mario Kart thing.
I've assisted him on a little bit of Bitcoin stuff.
Does he talk about that almost win at all?
Yeah, he does talk about it.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
he was close, man.
No, he's like, I'm gonna build a seed signer. That was like the first thing he did. He's like, I heard about seed signer. I bought all the parts for a seed signer.
Wow, we have one around here somewhere. You can have. I don't know.
Oh. Well, I think part of it is like, you know, like you're kind of acquiring all the parts.
And, oh, okay. So he's going to build it from scratch.
Yeah. But he's into it. So that's cool. And yeah, my mother-in-law is cool. And yeah, we just chilled. How about you? What are you doing this weekend?
We're going to move. So tomorrow I'm going to pack up all the stuff. And then Advent's on Sunday. So probably go to church in the morning.
What is Advent?
So it's like it's a reason to be still. It's a reason to start celebrating the coming of Jesus.
Okay. Is it like the Advent? Is that the Advent calendar? Is that really?
I guess, yeah. I guess that's a way to start doing that. But it's the coming of Christ. You know, the whole Bethlehem story.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not a daily practice.
I mean, you can be, but like right now you're supposed to be like very very like
focused.
Not focused, just supposed to be very like just still and like a very
contemplative.
I wouldn't say contemplative, just be comfortable, be in the moment, be still, know that I'm God, that kind of thing. It's just like everything's gonna be fine.
I see.
Everything's in front, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So you want to remove all the anxiousness, all the worries, all that kind of stuff. So you don't want to be too like, yeah, you don't want any of that kind of stuff. You just want it to be. I definitely feel like I'm at that point now, at least now after all the move stuff is finished, just in time.
Yeah. You'll be in a good spot to do it.
Starting Sunday. But it feels good. Feels good to be moving. Next week we'll have a whole new desk. We won't have this bad girl anymore.
Well, they don't really get to see it, so we won't. Yeah, Pete Harris won't be advertising with us anymore.
Man, they were paying us like $50K a month. Pete.
Dude, yeah, I got a free hamburger every week.
Like there goes that $50K every month. Gosh.
Yeah. Maria behind the counter, yeah, she would give me a free hamburger because
all that Pete Terry sauce.
You like the Pete Terry sauce?
I like the Pete Terry sauce.
The jalapenos.
I don't really eat Pete Terry's very often because it's like I feel like this Pete Terry's is like the worst Pete Terry's. But you know,
dude,
It's not very good, P-Terry's.
I like
the 6th Street one is not good. Like, if you go to any other P-Terry's, I feel like it's a way better P-Terry's.
I eat there all the time. If I'm like, if I do not want to cook or anything, and
you'll go to the 6th Street P-Terry's?
Or? I'll just order, right? I'll order online and I'll just go pick up food, and that's what I'll eat because it's cheap.
I mean, it's good. Don't get me wrong. It's just not as good as the other P-Terry's, I feel like.
Depends on what you're. I just get hamburgers, so I don't.
Yeah.
Oh, no cheese. No, I just get.
Oh, you just get the regular meat?
I just go, yeah, I'm just trying to get.
Do you get the
protein based
lettuce wrap, or do you do like the bread?
You have boat.
Oh, you get the boat?
You can get a boat. It comes in a little tray.
If I'm going to go anywhere around here, I would go to Cava because it's like really good.
Oh. Yeah, but they're. Every time I get, they fuck up my order every time I go, every time I order something from them, I end up waiting like 30 minutes.
Really? Oh, because you got it. No, that's the thing. You can't pre-order with them. You got to do it live.
That's how I operate in the world.
No, you can't pre-order.
I would pre-order everything if I could. I would.
Not at Cava. Yeah, once I did it once and realized that they screw, I was like, yeah, never again.
Yeah, I don't know why they can't get their.
Because they're busy, together. Dude.
No, but I'll even order when they're not busy. And they're like, oh, we didn't have what you ordered. So too bad, guy. And it's like, what? Yeah. I paid you money.
If you try to pay them in cash, they'll give it to you for free.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's why you like Cava. I mean, I'm saying,
if anybody comes to the 6th Street Cava location, try to pay them in cash, they'll give it to you for free. It works.
Dang. Well,
somebody we know did that. He told me that. And I was like, does that really work?
Yeah. It works. So, yeah, I don't know if it's reproducible.
Yet. It's not reproducible, but.
Oh, well.
Yeah. It's a thing.
But you should spend cash because.
No, I tried and then to see if they did it, and then I just paid with my card.
Oh.
But it's true. They will give it to you for free.
I guess it also, yeah, you kind of have them hostage because, like, you're like,
well, fill this bowl. But Cava's the only one that will do that, though. Like, you can't do that at Chipotle. Chipotle will literally be like, see ya.
Yeah, they'll, like, shank you. Yeah.
They'll just throw it away.
No, but, like, Cava, I feel like Cava, that you make this, they make this, you know, $30 bowl of stuff
why are you spending $30 on a bowl? This is why you can't afford laundry. Because you're spending $30 on a bowl, buddy.
This is why I go to P-Terry's. There's no possible way I could spend $30.
Exactly. But
you put me in a Cava line. I'm like, yes, I want the.
Man, I spent like $13 at Cava.
Black truffle shavings.
I spent like $13 at Cava.
The gold truffle hummus. Yeah, but no, but like they have no, like they're not going to throw out all that food. So I imagine you do have more leverage than you would at somewhere like Chipotle. Because, you know, you maybe have a $10 burrito they're going to throw away.
Oh, you're saying because of everything you put in there, maybe.
Yeah, because they went through the process. They've assumed that this is going to, the payment is going to succeed. So yeah. Like,
well, they need to swap the payment before then. Or I guess they can't do that because you're going to add all the ingredients.
Yeah, they don't want to add the friction at the front. You got to add it at the back.
Yeah, they didn't figure that out.
Well, they did. I think they realize, you know, most people are honest. They're going to pay. They're not going to try to. They'll be like, do you accept gold coins or whatever?
Hey, I do pay. I pay now with everything. But I'm just saying, like, when I found that out, I was like, is that really true? And then turns out it's true. They give it to you for free if you pay cash. Stackers, when you come visit Austin, definitely try the Cava trick and see if it works.
Yeah, Cava loophole.
Cava loophole.
Yeah.
It's an interesting trick. Yeah. Anyways, Keon.
Zap, zap, zap.